Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're heading back to ancient Israel.
Ooh, ancient Israel.
Yeah, to explore, how its monarchy came to be.
Okay.
And our main source is a lecture by Dr. Donald Fowler.
Okay.
He's a real expert on Old Testament backgrounds.
Thanks.
And get this. We're going to find out who the Philistines really were.
Not just the Samson.
The Samson and Delilah version.
Yeah.
Then we'll discover this city called Ugarit.
Okay.
It basically popped up out of nowhere.
Mm.
And it totally changed how we understand the Bible.
Wow. Okay.
And the big question, why did Israel go from a bunch of scattered tribes to a full-blown kingdom?
That is a good question.
So, okay, let's unpack this.
Sounds
so Philistines,
yeah.
We know them from those epic Bible stories, right?
Right.
But I feel like there's more to them than meets the eye.
Oh, absolutely.
Like way more.
Yeah, think of it this way.
Okay.
The Philistines were like part of these sea peoples.
Sea peoples.
Yeah. This mysterious group that migrated across the Mediterranean.
Oh, wow.
And basically turned the ancient world upside down.
Seriously? That sounds straight out of mythology.
I know. And there's so much we still don't know about them, which makes it even more more intriguing.
Yeah.
Get this, though. The Egyptians.
Okay.
They actually settled the Philistines.
Wait.
In some of their key cities.
Why would they do that?
Oh, it was a strategic move.
Okay.
Like, they saw the Philistines as a valuable asset in protecting their borders.
Mm.
And think about this. The name Palestine actually comes from Philistines.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, their impact is undeniable.
That is wild.
I know, right?
Makes you rethink their whole role in history, really.
Absolutely.
And speaking of impact,
yeah,
something that really stood out to me was how the Philistines had this monopoly on iron.
Oh, huge.
Like, that had to be a big deal back then, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Imagine, right.
Yeah.
Everyone else is working with bronze, and all of a sudden, iron.
Yeah.
Iron smelting was cutting edge technology back then.
Yeah.
And the Philistines had mastered it using these special bellows to crank up the heat because regular fire just wouldn't cut it.
So they were the only ones who could make iron, basically.
Pretty much. Yeah. They had iron swords, iron tools. And get this, they even supplied the iron for those infamous Canaanite iron chariots mentioned in the Bible.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They basically had the ancient equivalent of a weapons monopoly.
They were like the arms dealers.
Right.
I wouldn't want to be on their bad side.
Nope.
All right. Let's shift gears
and
talk about this lost city of Ugarit.
Ooh. Yes.
A farmer is plowing his field, right? Stumbles upon it and boom.
Boom.
It's like finding
a treasure trove.
Yeah. A treasure chest of
ancient history.
Ancient history.
I know. It's incredible.
Oh, talk about a lucky find.
Oh, absolutely. And Ugarit's like this time capsule, right? That totally changed how we understand the Bible.
Okay.
For one thing, they found one of the oldest alphabetic languages ever discovered.
Oh.
Yeah, that alone is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But what's really fascinating here is that Ugarit gave us a ton of info about Canaanite religion and culture, which the Old Testament doesn't really explain. It fills in those gaps, you know, gives context. For example, there's this word groves in the Bible, often thought to mean trees, right?
Yeah.
But Ugarit revealed that it actually referred to these wooden idols used in Canaanite worship.
Oh, wow.
So it really cleared up a lot of confusion about certain verses.
So it's like reading the Bible with footnotes from Ugarit.
Yeah. I think
that's pretty cool. Right. It makes those stories come alive.
Speaking of stories,
let's
talk about the period of judges.
Yeah.
You know, the time of
divinely
appointed leaders.
Yeah.
Sort of
golden age we often hear about.
Right, right. Ah, the golden age.
Yeah.
That's the common perception.
Yeah.
But if you dig a little deeper.
Okay.
The book of Judges actually paints a different picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's less about ideal leadership.
Okay.
And more about the lack of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about chaos, everyone doing their own thing.
Okay.
In fact, the book never actually calls those figures judges.
Yeah.
Where word just doesn't appear.
No way.
In that context.
That's totally different.
I know, right?
From how I always pictured it.
It's a good reminder to look beyond the surface.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's more. Yeah. When you read closely,
yeah,
you notice that key terms like Torah, prophet, ark, they're basically absent.
Oh, wow.
Which suggests, some serious religious backsliding going on.
So not a golden age after all.
Not really, no.
More like a time of...
unrest.
Unrest and...
Uncertainty.
Uncertainty, yeah. I'd even argue that it was a period of anarchy.
Anarchy.
A lack of unity and consistent leadership.
Right.
Which I think is really important as we shift gears to the biggest question. Why a monarchy?
Right.
Weren't the Israelites supposed to be led by God?
Exactly.
You know, what prompted this drastic change?
And how does all of this, the Philistines, Ugarit, the chaos of the judges, tie into this monumental shift?
Yeah, that's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
The story of the monarchy isn't about rejecting God.
Okay.
It's about this... this desperate need for stability and unity in the face of all these threats.
So they craved a leader.
Who could unite them, protect them, someone visible.
Exactly. The chaotic period of judges made them realize that they needed a different kind of leadership. They needed a king.
Okay.
Someone who could bring order.
Yeah.
Someone they could rally behind.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But if God was supposed to be their leader, wouldn't choosing a king feel like a rejection of his rule?
Well, that's a question that haunted the Israelites. And it's a tension we'll explore as we delve deeper into the story of the monarchy.
Okay.
But remember, even though God allowed for a king, he was still ultimately in control.
Okay.
His plan was unfolding even through these tumultuous times.
This is already making me rethink so much of what I thought I knew.
I know, right?
About ancient Israel.
It's fascinating. And we've only just begun. Buckle up, because the next chapter takes us into the reign of the first king.
Okay.
A figure both powerful and deeply flawed.
Oh, no. I can't wait to hear about it.
I know. It's a good one.
Okay, so we've got this chaotic backdrop.
Yeah.
Of the judges period.
Right.
The Philistines flexing those
iron muscles.
Yeah. Their iron muscles.
Right.
And Ugarit shaking up.
Yeah.
How we understand ancient culture.
Absolutely.
No wonder the Israelites were ready for a change. But I'm curious, how did this whole king thing even come about?
Well, picture this. The Israelites, right?
Yeah.
Feeling vulnerable, desperate for stability. They approach the prophet Samuel.
Okay.
And they basically say,
okay,
hey, we want a king, just like all the other nations.
And Samuel, being the devout guy he was, probably wasn't too thrilled about that.
No, not at all.
I mean, they already had a king.
Exactly. They had God. Right. He saw it as a rejection of God's sovereignty.
Yeah.
A lack of faith, you know, in the one who had always been their guide.
Right.
But God, in his wisdom, understood the people's desire for a visible human leader. And he allowed it.
It sounds kind of like a parent letting their kid learn a lesson the hard way.
That's a great analogy.
Even though they know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might end in tears.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it wasn't like God just said, okay, fine, have your king.
No. Right? He also warned them about the potential pitfalls, of human leadership.
Yeah.
How power can corrupt. Yeah. How a king could become a tyrant.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a warning that echoes throughout history.
Oh, absolutely.
Even today.
Yeah. Power can be a tricky thing.
Absolutely.
So who was chosen as the first king of Israel? Saul. Okay.
From the tribe of Benjamin.
Okay.
Tall, handsome guy. Yeah. Definitely looked the part.
Okay. Yeah.
But his reign.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit of a Shakespearean tragedy.
Oh, no. Give me the
okay,
the juicy details.
So at first, Saul's doing great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unites the tribes, scores some victories against the Philistines. All seems good. But then cracks start to show. He gets paranoid, disobeys God's commands. Lets his insecurities drive him to make bad decisions.
Classic case of power going to someone's head.
You could say that there's that that famous story of him offering a sacrifice he wasn't supposed to.
Right.
You know, his pride and fear got the better of him.
Yeah.
Eventually, he loses the throne. And ultimately, his life
What a downfall.
I know, right?
It reminds me of that saying, yep. Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Exactly.
Right.
Saul's story is a stark reminder that even those in positions of power are human, right?
Yeah.
Prone to the same flaws and temptations as anyone else.
But even in Saul's failures, God's plan was still moving forward, right?
Yeah. And that's where we meet David, this young shepherd chosen by God to be the next king.
Ah, David. Now, there's a name.
I know, right?
That needs no introduction.
David and Goliath.
Right. The
warrior poet.
Warrior poet, the king who made Jerusalem the capital.
Exactly.
It's almost hard to separate the man from the legend.
Yeah. He's a complex figure.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And his story is full of twists and turns.
Okay.
Just like Saul's. But there's a key difference.
Okay.
David's known for his deep devotion to God. Even when he messes up, he owns it, repents, and seeks forgiveness.
So a king who actually walked the walk.
Yes.
It's not just talked the talk.
He's described as a man after God's own heart.
Right.
He expands the kingdom, builds a powerful army, lays the groundwork for what becomes a golden age under his son Solomon.
Okay, so David, successful king, devout follower of God.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't there also that whole scandal with Bathsheba?
Oh, right.
Like even the man after God's own heart had his flaws.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
You're right. The David story, all human stories, has its dark side.
Right.
His adultery with Bathsheba and the events that followed, including the death of her husband Uriah.
Yeah.
Those are stains on his legacy. Yeah. That can't be ignored.
It's a reminder that even the best of us can fall.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
That's a terrible choice.
And David faces the consequences.
Yeah.
His family's torn apart.
Right.
By conflict, his kingdom, threatened by rebellion.
Mm.
It's a harsh lesson that no one, not even a king, is above the law.
But even with all that drama, David still keeps turning back to God.
He does.
Right.
And that's an important takeaway. Mm. No matter how badly we mess up, there's always a path back to God.
Hmm.
He offers forgiveness and restoration when we sincerely repent.
That's a message we could all use.
Yeah.
A reminder of sometimes.
Absolutely.
So we've gone from Saul,
right,
the tragic king, to David, the...
the flawed but devoted.
Yeah, the flawed but devoted leader.
Yes.
What happens next?
Well, David's son, Solomon, takes the throne.
Uh-huh.
And with him, we enter another fascinating chapter in the story of ancient Israel.
Solomon, the wise king, known for his...
legendary wealth.
Legendary wealth, those grand...
Building projects. His wisdom.
And wisdom that supposedly rivaled the Egyptians.
Oh, yeah.
His reign must have been quite a...
Oh, he definitely lived up to his reputation.
Right.
Under Solomon, Israel reaches peak power and influence.
Okay.
It's a golden age,
peace,
prosperity, and impressive achievements.
He builds the magnificent temple.
Yes.
In Jerusalem.
Yes.
A symbol of
God's presence.
God's presence and the...
and the nation's devotion.
Yeah, the nation's devotion.
His court was like a magnet for scholars and dignitaries from all over.
Must have been the place to be.
It was a time of incredible opulence and grandeur.
Mm.
Solomon's wisdom was renowned throughout the region.
Yeah.
He forged alliances with neighboring kingdoms, securing peace and stability for Israel.
So it seemed like nothing could go wrong.
Right.
But there's always a but.
There's always a but.
Right.
Sadly, despite his wisdom, Solomon made some critical mistakes.
Okay.
Those massive building projects.
Yeah.
And his extravagant lifestyle placed a heavy burden on the people.
Right. And
resentment started brewing.
And I remember reading about his many foreign wives.
Oh, yes.
Despite warnings against those kinds of alliances.
Well, exactly. Didn't that cause some problems?
Big problems.
Yeah.
Those foreign wives brought their own gods
and
religious practices into Israel.
Mm.
It led to this this blending of religions,
right,
straying from the worship of Yahweh.
So even with all his wisdom, Solomon's choices ultimately weakened the kingdom.
And those compromises
would have devastating consequences.
Oh, no.
After Solomon's death, the kingdom would face its biggest challenge yet.
Okay.
Division.
Oh, no. So the kingdom that David and Solomon worked so hard to build, it all falls apart.
It's a heartbreaking turn of events.
And that's where we'll pick up in the final part of our deep dive.
We'll explore the aftermath of Solomon's reign, the divided kingdom, and what this turbulent period means for us today.
I'm already on the edge of my seat.
Oh, I know. It's a good one.
Okay, so we've gone through the ups and downs of ancient Israel.
We have.
The the chaotic period of Judges.
Right.
The rise of kings like Saul, David, Solomon.
A big name.
Each one leaving their mark.
For better or worse.
For better or worse, right?
Yeah.
But seems like even the wisest king can make choices that unravels everything.
Yeah. They're human, too.
Right.
Right.
I'm kind of nervous to find out what happens next.
It's a wild ride.
So after all that work to unite the tribes, the kingdom splits.
It does.
It's like watching a house divided against itself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What
led to this?
Yeah, what led to this?
Dramatic breakup.
This dramatic breakup.
Well, after Solomon's death, his son, Rehoboam, takes the throne. But instead of learning from his father's mistakes, Rehoboam basically doubles down on some of the policies that had created all that resentment among the people.
Like what kind of policies?
Well, heavy taxes.
Okay.
And mandatory labor for those big building projects.
Right, yeah.
Solomon was so fond of.
Yeah.
So the people, they were burdened, and they pleaded with Rehoboam for relief.
So did Rehoboam listen?
Sadly, no.
No.
He basically told them to suck it up.
Oh, wow.
He was arrogant, out of touch.
Right.
Completely ignored the growing discontent.
Wow, talk about bad leadership.
Oh, yeah.
Did the people just take it lying down?
They did not.
Okay.
10 of the 12 tribes basically said, enough is enough.
Wow.
They broke away.
Okay.
Forming the Northern Kingdom of Israel.
Okay, so 10 tribes in the north.
Right.
What about the other two?
They remained loyal to the Davidic dynasty and formed the southern kingdom of Judah with Jerusalem as its capital.
Okay, two kingdoms.
Yeah.
Two destinies.
Right. What happens to them?
Do they ever...
Did they get back together?
Get back together.
Sadly, no. Mm. For the next two centuries, they coexist, sometimes as rivals, sometimes as uneasy allies.
Right.
It's a period of political intrigue. Religious reforms and the constant threat of powerful empires like Assyria and Babylon lurking in the shadows.
It sounds like things are about to get even more complicated.
Yeah, it's about to get messy.
So the Northern Kingdom of Israel,
they struggle with
instability
and a return to idolatry. A string of kings, many corrupt and unfaithful to God, lead the nation further and further away from its covenant with Yahweh.
So they basically fall back into the same patterns that led to the need for a king in the first place.
It's a sad but familiar cycle.
And eventually this this spiritual and political decline...
Yeah, it all
leads to their
downfall.
Downfall.
In 722 BC, the Assyrian Empire, known for its brutality and military might, conquers the northern kingdom.
Oh, wow.
The people are scattered. Their kingdom is no more.
That's a tragic end to a kingdom.
It is.
That once held so much promise.
Yeah.
What about Judah?
Well... They hold on for a while longer,
okay.
But their story takes a similar turn despite the efforts of some good kings like Hezekiah and Josiah who tried to bring about religious reforms, revive the nation's covenant with God. Judah also falls prey to idolatry and corruption.
So they, too, succumb to the same forces that brought down Israel.
Unfortunately, yes.
And in 586 BC,
the Babylonian Empire, led by King Nebuchadnezzar, conquers Jerusalem, destroys the temple, and takes many of the people of Judah into exile.
It's a devastating blow.
It is.
Not only to their political independence, but also to their religious and cultural identity.
Absolutely.
I mean, their holy city lies in ruins.
Mm-hmm.
Their temple destroyed.
Right.
Their people scattered.
Well, it's...
It feels like the end of an era.
Yeah, it's a time of immense sorrow and upheaval.
But even in this, this darkness, are there glimmers of hope?
There are. There are.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How so?
Because throughout this period...
Okay.
Prophets like Isaiah,
okay.
Jeremiah, Ezekiel continue to speak God's word, calling the people to repentance, offering a message of hope for restoration.
So even in exile,
their
faith endures.
Right.
They cling to this belief that God will bring them back home. Their faith is tested and refined.
Refined in the fires of suffering.
And the prophets remind them
that
God's covenant with them isn't broken.
Right. They prophesy that one day God will restore his people to their land, rebuild the temple, and establish a new covenant with them.
And this one based not on external rules, but on a transformed heart.
Exactly.
Wow. That's powerful.
These prophecies sustain the people, you know, through their long years of exile, pointing towards a future of redemption.
It's a reminder.
It is.
That even when everything seems lost, God is still
at work.
Yeah.
Weaving his purposes into the fabric of history.
This has been an incredible journey.
It has.
I mean, we've seen the rise and fall of kings,
the allure
and danger of power,
the consequences
of
straying from one's faith.
Yeah, straying from one's faith.
But also the enduring hope that can sustain a people.
Right. Even in the darkest of times.
And these ancient stories aren't just dusty tales from the past.
Right.
They offer timeless insights.
Timeless insights.
Out to the...
human condition.
Yeah, the human condition.
Our relationship with power.
Mm.
The consequences of our choices.
They remind us that even in the face of failure and defeat, there's always the possibility.
Redemption and renewal.
Redemption and renewal,
I think that's a message we can all take to heart.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for guiding us through this.
It's been my pleasure.
This deep dive into the world of ancient Israel.
I've enjoyed it.
It's been a real eye-opener.
And for our listeners, as you go about your day, consider this. What choices are you making?
Yeah.
What impact are those choices having on yourself, your community, the world around you?
And how can you, even in your own small way, contribute to a future of hope and restoration?
Those are
those
are powerful questions.
They are.
And I think they're the perfect way to wrap up our deep dive today.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
We'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon.
With another fascinating exploration of history.
Yes.
And its relevance for our lives.
For our lives today.